Hello, everybody.
Hey.
It's been a minute since we've been in your ears, unless you listen to old episodes, but
yeah,
this has been a while. We took the whole summer off, kind of unintentionally.
Whole summer. Well, yeah, whole good part of summer.
Yeah.
Whole part of summer everyone enjoys. Now we're in the dog days.
Yeah, now we're in the getting ready to go back to school, all of that stuff. Yeah,
the dog days.
The dog days of summer.
Use
the hottest
as
month
much
of summer in Chicago
can.
This month. Although today it's like unseasonable. What did you say?
Oh, sorry. I was saying, yeah, use that phrase as much as I possibly can.
Just because it's a dog podcast.
Yeah.
I was saying August is traditionally like the hottest month of the summer in Chicago. But today it's unseasonably cool. It's like 70 degrees outside.
Yeah, been pretty mild summer here. Here, but a lot of heat waves all over the place. But mild here.
We had our first 100 degree day last week.
Yeah, there's usually a few heat waves every summer. But
yeah,
it's been fine.
We're literally talking about weather. Like, we're talking about weather.
we're
making the simplest small talk to our guests.
You know what?
Today.
This is the most exciting time for weather in the history of humanity, so.
Oh, wow. Okay, we're not going to get into why, because it's not good that weather, it's not like weather decided to have a party.
We're going
to
talk about it.
We're talking about dogs today.
Ooh, fun.
Yes, but first, let's do a quick summer update. Dylan, you have a haircut now. I mean, not as
haircut.
If everyone can see you, but you have your haircut makes you just look so cute.
I thought you were gonna bring up how I don't work with dogs anymore.
Oh yeah, no, I didn't bring that up.
Not right now. I'm looking for a new job.
Yeah,
my car got totaled, so yeah, I can't work my old dog walking, dog sitting job that I used to.
Yeah.
So right now I'm looking for jobs in restaurants as well as dog care.
Sure.
Yeah, a few kennels I've applied to.
I encourage you to take like a whole month off. I was like, just take a month off. You never had a day off.
Well, yeah, I've been looking for jobs the whole time anyway, so.
Yeah, not like you've just that been sitting at happen. Home playing like Minecraft or something.
Yeah,
that's
doing
what
improv
I do,
classes as well. Finally
yeah,
got into
so you
that.
Had an improv show. You had your first improv show in Chicago.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. I went and saw it.
Yeah, the class started with 13 people. We were four in the show.
It was pretty solid, though. I will say
it was a lot of
very
fun.
Funny. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what's important.
And yeah, then, keep yeah doing shows and the classes at the Annoyance Theater.
Nice. It's right off Belmont. For any of you Chicagoans listening and don't know where that
convenient
is.
For us.
Very convenient. Yeah. And then I have been reading the same book since June. So that's been my summer.
What book have you been reading since June?
Eleanor and Franklin.
Oh, wow.
Okay, to be fair, it is a 922-page book. It's not small. So I chose it as my summer read. And July kind of got ahead of me. I didn't have a lot of time to read. We are going to talk about the Roosevelts today, though, so that's fun.
Oh, okay.
And then I've received many books for my birthday that's coming up, and also for Christmas from last year, and I went book shopping when we went to Massachusetts to visit Dylan's family, so plenty to read. But yeah, that's my book update.
And your birthday's coming up, getting plenty of books for that,
week.
Too.
It's a week from tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I turned 29.
29.
Yeah, great. No, I'm
in your 20s.
I'm excited to end my 20s. I actually am kind of
got
happy
a whole year left. Jeez.
Yeah, it'll be a nice fade out.
End it hard
into my 30s. End it hard. No, no thanks.
No fade out. Crash
I'm
into.
I'm gonna end it light.
Crash into your 30s.
Yikes! No.
Break the wall.
No, I'd rather open the door gently and sneak in.
Probably safer.
But. Anyway, yeah, so that's my life. I have a birthday coming up. Dylan is just floating. No, I'm just kidding.
Floating between jobs with a sick new haircut.
Yeah, Dylan has a sick new haircut. I do love your haircut, though. It looks really nice.
Well, thank you.
Although, if you style it the wrong way, he looks like Dwight Schrute, and it's actually really funny.
Oh, yeah, I can comb it, yeah, right side to side.
Yeah.
Just like Dwight.
Okay. You came to this podcast to listen to a show about dogs, and that's not what we're giving you, but I'm going to start that right now for you. So today, to kick off season 6 of We're Getting a Dog, which is crazy. We're already at season 6.
Lucky number 6.
Yes, we have breeds. Lucky number 6. It's what? No, that's not it.
You know what? Every number is lucky.
Okay. Not 4. Don't ever say 4 is a lucky number to a Chinese person. It means death.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. I thought 6 was the joke
I'm not sure
I was
if
making.
That's,
but
I think it's China. It might be Asia, like some parts of Asia in general. But I had a woman once who checked into the hotel and she didn't want to stay on the 14th floor because it had the number 4 in it. And she came to the desk and she told me, and I kind of had a moment of being like, you know, this is kind of like a custom. So, yeah, it's fine. I put her on like the 12th
floor.
Just
tell her, actually, don't even worry. It's the 13th floor.
And that's kind of the lie. Don't worry, is lady. It really my hotel says it's 24 floors. It's 23 because there's no 13th floor.
Yeah, I lived on the 14th floor in a building one time, and every time I got in the elevator, I laughed at the Mitch Hedberg joke about how they removed the 13th floor from Billy. Like, come on, people on the 14th floor, you know what floor you're really on.
Yeah, no, it's, I have a lot of people ask me that, and they don't understand why, and I'm like, it's just like an American custom, because 13's an unlucky number here. Yeah. Just like 4 in China. Okay, so for this season, we have asked our patrons on Patreon, our family members, our close friends, to submit breeds to us to cover.
Yeah, so, thank you all so much.
Yeah, we thank you very much, patrons, and on Patreon. We have decided to cover a number of breeds that we have kind of no interest in. No, I'm just kidding. No, the first one that we're going to do of these breeds that have been chosen for us came from my mom. So thanks, Mom. And that is going to be the Scottish Terrier.
All right.
They have a very interesting history, though. Very straightforward history. And one of the most famous dogs of all time in America was a Scottish Terrier. So we'll talk about that later in the episode. But as usual, we're going to kick off with a general appearance and breed standard. Now, if you want to follow along in the photos, those are going to be in the links in the episode for you. And this first one is just a picture I found of a pretty traditional looking Scottish Terrier.
Ah, yeah, they're so cute.
They're very little, I think. But
yeah,
anyway,
this is, yeah, that's a Scottish Terrier. Mm-hmm. It's a very recognizable breed.
Yes. The description of this breed is nothing short of impressive. A, quote, small, compact, short-legged, sturdily built dog of good bone and substance, the Scottish Terrier's bold, confident, dignified aspect exemplifies power in a small package.
It's like a suitcase of a dog.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Leather carrying bag.
Well, we don't do that. We don't turn a dog into a bag. Just for anyone who wants to misinterpret.
No, just looks like one. Be a little furry purse.
The Scottish Terrier, native to Scotland, obviously, and believed to be the first of the Highland Terrier breeds native to Scotland, exemplifies the balance of strength in a compact form. They're well known as efficient vermin hunters, and since the 19th century, they have enjoyed great popularity both in Great Britain, its former colonies, and America. In the United States, they were made even more popular thanks to one of America's most famous presidents, FDR.
Oh, well. Yeah. I mean, all the presidents were pretty famous, but
FDR, I think, most is kind of on another level, though, as far as, like, you know, you have a whole chapter about FDR in school. No one's having a whole chapter about
Hoover.
No, well, Hoover's kind of like, you learn about Hoover.
He's in the beginning of the first chapter that's
who's
on FDR.
Who's a president that just no one knows?
Millard Fillmore.
Thank you. Yeah. No one has a chapter about Millard Fillmore in their high school, like, American history textbook.
But there is one in my new book. My favorite people in history.
Millard Fillmore. Okay, so the Scottish Terrier, or Scotty, is a nickname, weighs between 18 to 22 pounds and is about 10 inches tall and about 11 inches long. So they are rather slightly a rectangle, like just a rectangle.
Yeah, like a suitcase. Mm-hmm. Square purse.
They are quite compact, but they should be very well proportioned too. They have a very geometric face and body, making an even rectangle shaped body with a sort of triangle facial shape, sort of like if it was 3D. Their eyes are wider set, sitting at the points of the triangle in their face at the near top of their head. Their eyes are also almond shaped and are described in the breed standard as being piercing in either color of dark brown or black. The shaping of their fur also aids in achieving a more exaggerated look. Although they're small, they have a heavier bone density and a decent amount of bodily strength. Like I said, they were traditionally used to hunt vermin that would burrow into the ground, so they also have exceptional amounts of energy, and they have a short tail that is never docked. Now, their coat is interesting because it is described as a broken double coat, which I'd never heard of before.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
It means, I don't really know what it means. I tried to Google it and there was really no result. It just said double coat. But the outer coat is wiry and harsh and then their undercoat is soft, dense, and kind of woolly. So it has to be trimmed every 6 to 8 weeks, and the two coats have to be blended together in order to, like, make the dog's cut look correct. Hmm. So there's like kind of a decent amount of like scissor work, I think, that has to go into grooming one of these dogs.
Is that what makes it broken?
Maybe.
But they're blended?
Like, they're blended, yeah.
It sounds sort of like a schnauzer coat.
Sort of. Well, and they do have the skirt.
Kind of like it, but it's not quite as wavy. But yeah, they have like a mustache kind of face too. So
almost like a little beard. Right, I love their eyebrows, though. They're so big.
Yeah. Schnauzers have eyebrows too.
Yes.
Yeah, this reminds me of miniature schnauzers overall.
The standard cut is described as looking as though the fur is an outline of the dog, if that makes sense.
Isn't that for most fur for dogs?
I don't know
what that means.
Yeah, it was kind of, that was a quote. The colors, they come in three. Black is the first one, which is the first link there. The next one is Wheaton, which I think...
Will Wheaton?
Yeah, Will Wheaton. And it's a nice kind of, it's like wheat colored. It's it's very nice. I like that one a lot. That's probably my favorite. And then the next one is brindle, and it says it can be brindle of any color. And if you remember, brindle is the kind of stripy.
Yeah, brown and black specks over a lighter body.
Yeah.
Yeah, really looking like schnauzers to me.
Very much so. That's what I thought, too. And it's funny because schnauzers, I'll talk about this a little bit more in the history. Schnauzers are one of the only, I think, the only terrier that did not come from Great Britain.
Really?
All the other terriers came from Great Britain.
Every other terrier breed?
The first known accepted terriers, schnauzers were the only ones that were not British.
Okay, wow.
Or even Scottish, I think, until the other terriers were, like, named, basically.
I see.
The Scottish Terrier is a very alert dog that is always watchful of strangers approaching their territory. While gentle, though not shy with people and friendly when comfortable, they may not like attention going to other dogs and may also react negatively towards other pets, especially cats. So no cats in the house, because they won't like them.
Oh, darn.
Nicknamed the Die Hard, the Scottie has bounds of strength for its small size, and thanks to its powerful body, have become quite accomplished as an agility dog.
Nicknamed the Die Hard.
That's their nickname, apparently. That just was another quote.
Yippee-ki-yay.
God. So, this next video is of their bark. So, their bark is described definitely terrier. It's a terrier bark. It's growly and gruff, not threatening or deep, but it has an alerting... Definitely an alerting bark for if strangers approach.
Right, yeah. Standard terrier. Big alert.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's their bark, basically. Very run-of-the-mill bark, I would say. Very terrier bark.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like moose.
Right. Maybe a little bigger.
A little deeper, yeah. All right. Oh, we need to take a break, don't we? that's the thing we do here in the show. Okay, so we're going to take a break because that's the end of the description. What do you think so far, Dylan?
Yeah, it seemed like a cute dog.
They are cute. I should take back that I don't like them as much. They are really cute, but I'm just so averse to terriers. I'm such a hound person.
Well, they sound like, they're pretty energetic.
Yeah. Well, hold tight, everyone. We're going to hear from another Arcadia show, and then we will come right back with the history of the Scottish Terrier.
All right.
Hello, listeners. Wesley here to talk to you a little bit about how you can support this show. For each episode of all of our podcasts here at Arcadia, we spend our own money on books, articles, and other materials so that we can bring you podcasts that are thoroughly researched and fact-checked. All of the hosts and producers of these shows also work full-time jobs in addition to the podcast so that we can support this passion we all share. If you'd like to support us at We're Getting a Dog, as well as the other podcasts in the Arcadia Podcast Network, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/We're Getting a Dog or our website, WeGettingADog.com/support. For as low as $2 per month, you can get access a day early to every new episode of We're Getting a Dog and other Arcadia Podcast Network shows, such as Coffee's On and Good Food for Bad Friends. And at higher levels, you can get one-of-a-kind swag. Thank you for supporting the Arcadia Podcast Network and for listening to this podcast. Now back to the show. All right, we are back with the history of the Scottish Terrier. Now, they are native to the Scottish Highlands, so that's first.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, from the 1600s to the 1800s, some of the only, like, primary information I could find about Scottish Terriers was that King James I of England, who was born in Scotland, gave away Scottish Terriers from the Highlands as royal gifts. Mm-hmm. But they may not have been, like, the Scottish Terrier that we would know today.
The 16th century, you said?
That was, yeah, 17th century, so the 1600s. The next piece of information I could find was not dated until the mid-1800s, presumably because it wasn't until then that the mad dash to make records about all the British dogs began to really happen.
Right.
It's accepted that the Terrier, a group of breeds that originated in the Scottish Highlands, except for the miniature Schnauzer, was present in that area long before the record keeping of the Victorian era began. So, you know, these dogs probably existed for a very long time in that part of Scotland, in the Highlands. It's, and for a long time too, any terrier that came from there was called a Scottish Terrier. So there really wasn't like a clear-cut identification for a long time. The word terrier, which I thought was interesting, I don't know if we've mentioned this, the word terrier is derived from the Latin word terra, which means earth, and they were called terriers presumably because they used to dig and kill small rodents and vermin from the earth and the farm.
I was about to say all the dogs were aliens.
No.
Okay.
Though originally called the Aberdeen Terrier, the colloquial term Scotch or Scottish Terrier ended up becoming their official name by the time their first breed standard was published in 1882. Mm. However, the term Scottish Terrier, like I said, did not refer to this breed specifically, but to all terriers from Scotland. By the mid-1800s, there were two categories of terrier dogs, the rough-coated and short-legged dogs of Scotland and the smooth-coated and long-legged dogs of England.
Ooh.
So, yeah. According to the print source we used for this episode, during the mid to late 1800s, you could find, quote, all of the Scottish breed types in one litter. Which is kind of horrifying to be like, oh my gosh, there really is no system. Like,
well, I mean, it sounds like, you know, if they were in one litter, they'd be one breed, I guess.
Interbreeding different looking terriers was very common then as well. And often a dog's color was used as the distinguishing factor to determine what kind of terrier they were. Not like body, it was their color.
It's not a great system.
After all the mess of the 19th century, four modern terrier breeds came from the Scottish Highlands. And those are the Scottish Terrier, the West Highland White Terrier, the Cairn Terrier, and the Skye Terrier, which we covered last season.
What was the third one? The Carrion?
The Cairn Terrier?
Cairn.
Yeah. The Cairn Terrier. How are you?
Cairn.
I'll probably cut that out. When dog shows became in vogue during the latter Victorian era, the Scottish Terrier types were collectively shown in the, quote, hard-coated Scottish Terrier class.
Yeah. Okay.
In 1879, the UK Kennel Club offered classes for the Scotch Terrier, which marked the official beginning, in at least the name, of the Scottish Terrier breed.
Okay, but they were drunk.
Why? What grounds do we have to think? Oh, no, not like they're drinking scotch in a terrier.
Oh.
Their scotch also means Scottish.
Right.
Wow.
But they were drunk because they're Scottish,
no,
right?
No, okay. No, we're going to keep going. So the first Scottish Terrier Club of Great Britain was formed in 1882, and they made very quick work of creating the breed's first standard. This club, however, disbanded in 1887. The standard they wrote was published in a book titled The Book of Dog by Vero Shaw. And
it's pretty vague.
Well, I think it's a collection of standards.
Oh, okay.
The second club was formed in 1883 by H.J. Ludlow, a well-established Scottish Terrier fancier of the time. Mm-hmm. His club would outlast the first one. And that may partly be thanks because of the fact that Mr. Ludlow bred 8 out of the first 20 Scottish Terrier champions in Great Britain. So he was definitely well known. In a couple of sources, it stated that these first champions and equally talented show Scotties were the origins of the modern Scottish Terrier that we would see today. Mm. From the late 19th century into the years preceding World War I, the Scottish Terrier received widespread acclaim and a steady increase in popularity each year. This was also in part thanks to the secretary of the Scottish Terrier Club, Mr. W. L. McClandish. He published several works about the breed between 1903 and 1914, and some of his works are still considered accurate reference points when adjudicating the Scottish Terrier today, which is pretty cool. Mr. McClandish owned Ems Kennels, which was one of the first major kennels in this breed's history. Sadly, Ems Kennels closed as a result of World War I. Like many dog breeds of the time, especially in Great Britain, the World Wars always, you know, they nearly exhausted all the resources to breed a dog.
They just ruined everything.
Yeah, and many kennels closed as a result. Now, we're still in Great Britain. We're not in America yet. I should have said that first. We are in Great Britain for this history still.
Boo.
So we're into the 20th century now. Already. So after we're getting there. After World War I in Great Britain, the Scottish Terriers... the Scottish Terriers...
It's always England.
It is always England. Dun, da, da, da. So after World War I, Scottish Terriers were defined, at least in the 1920s and 30s in Great Britain, by two breeders, A.J. Cowley of Alborne Kennels and Robert Chapman Jr. and Sr. of Heather Kennels. These kennels, especially throughout the 1930s, pretty much dominated the show ring and the breeding standard for Scottish Terriers. The 1930s, according to multiple sources, was this breed's golden age, both in the UK and in America. Sadly, though, and kind of somewhat predictably now, the Second World War again devastated European cities and resources, thus bringing the breed of virtually all European and UK dog breeds to a near halt again. The breed came back fiercely, though. The first post-war Scottish Terrier show in 1945 drew a whopping 223 entries for the show.
Well, this is usually where America comes in, because America still had plenty of dogs, because the country wasn't as ravaged by the war.
We're not there yet. So the later 1940s saw a bounding increase in the Scotty registration, thanks to a deluge of new breeders and kennels starting up during that time in the UK. So from 1945 on into the 1950s, they continued to remain very, like, almost extremely popular. Yeah. But by the 60s and 70s, the breed's overall popularity began to wane. I think, you know, honestly, in those eras that when the mod movement came, and then, you know, in the 60s in Great Britain, and then in the 70s, you know, I don't think the breed just kept its popularity because there were other looks, you know.
Well, I know a lot of other dogs were rising in popularity at the time. Might have just become faux pas.
Right. The UK Kennel Club does not publish a ranked list like the AKC does, but they do publish breeding records. So it looks like nowadays the Scotty may not be the most popular terrier breed in the UK, but it is like third place among all the terrier breeds in the United Kingdom.
Okay.
So that's just kind of a guesstimate, if you will.
Yeah, they're still fairly popular, right?
Yeah, I would say so. You'll find them, especially in Scotland, but in they're not like everyone has them like they were during the pre-World War II decades.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you can quit your whining now because we're in America.
Yay.
So...
Yeah, I said faux pas when I meant passé. It's okay, we're in America. No one cares.
Okay. So in America, those Scottish Terriers were introduced to the States in the 1880s as well. Like in Great Britain, they got popular. They were first kind of recognized then at the same time. It was not until the early 1900s that breed fanciers began to promote them to a wide audience. So before it was kind of a specialty breed in America, and then...
But just for like ratting and stuff?
Yeah, and also I probably just as an import dog for that, like an imported terrier. However, a Dr. Fayette Ewing of Louisiana. I hope I'm saying that right.
Fayette Ewing.
It was E-W-I-N-G. And I had a friend Louisiana with that last name, and I think it was Ewing. But anyway, he was very active in the promotion of the breed, particularly by publishing the first in-depth book about the Scottish Terrier for public consumption. So he wrote like a book only about the Scottish Terrier and promoted the crap out of it. At Westminster, the first Scottish Terrier to win the Best in Show title was Tickle'em Jock, who was given that in given the honor in 1911. And we have
Jock.
We have a photo of all of them. That's Tickle'em Jock.
That's a ridiculous name.
I know.
Okay. Bit of a blurry photo.
Yeah, I mean it's 1911. Maybe a
looks kind of like Toto.
A little bit. Now,
is that a brindle?
I don't know. The 1920s and 30s were the most progressive decades regarding the popularity of the breed.
Okay, I thought you were going to stop most progressive decades, and no. I don't think that's true.
British fanciers did a great deal of exporting their top breeding stock to America, as well as establishing or aiding kennels within the breed. So they, you know, would import their own stock or back to America, start a kennel there, and then, you know, have dual kennels, so to speak. Yeah. That was implied, at least, in the book. All of this interactivity with the British led to a quick advancement of the Scottish Terrier in the United States. In America, as in Great Britain, the peak of popularity for the Scottie was during the 1930s into the 1940s. For 5 years throughout the 1930s, the Scottish Terrier ranked as the third most registered dog breed in America. I don't think they were consecutive years, though. I think they were kind of just like dotted throughout that decade.
Okay.
Additionally, the Scottie has won Best in Show at Westminster 8 times since 1911, the second most of any breed in the AKC.
Oh, wow.
The only breed to have won more is the Wire Fox Terrier, which has won a staggering 15 times, the most recently in 2019.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. It was very... I'm so surprised. But anyway, I figured it would be fun to list all the Scottish Terriers who have won the title of Westminster's Best in Show. So here they are. And you can follow along in the photos. We already saw Tickle'em Jock. The next one is...
We saw that Jock Tickle'em.
I knew you were going to say something. The next one was in 1945, and that is Sheeling's Signature.
Ah.
Very floofy from the... Yeah.
And the handler looks amazed.
There is no...
He's so perfect. Or I was holding his leash. I mean,
I don't think he's leashed in that photo, actually.
There's a guy holding, you know, the thing above his head.
What?
Oh, my God. Wait, I clicked the wrong picture.
That's what I thought.
Sorry. I don't know how.
Did you see Sheeling's Signature?
Yeah, it looks more like a silhouette.
Yes.
Of a Scottie.
The next one was in 1950.
Well, that's the one I was looking at
this
first.
Is my favorite. One of my favorite names. It's Walsing Winning Track of Edgar Stone. And Edgar Stone Edgar Kennels Stone. Was a very well-known, very well-established kennel in Great Britain. Like, they were known. And so this was their winning stud.
It's a nice bowl you win.
It is a nice bowl. The next win at the AK, or not the AKC, at Westminster was in 1665. I meant to type 1965.
And I realized there wouldn't be a photo.
The next one was in 1965, and that is Carmichael's Fanfare. Now, the next couple ones, the only images I could find were these New York Times articles.
Well, there's some very messy poodles right underneath the champion.
That's kind of, I think, before poodles were, like, perfect looking. They were just big floofs, like...
Where they perfected the blow-drying technology.
Yeah, they look like cotton candy. But the Scottie is above. The next one is in 1967. That's Barden's Bingo. Again, this is a New York Times article.
And some Daisy Dinmonts below it or something? Some other terriers?
Know. I don't know. They look like kind of Bichons a little bit. Hmm? I don't know. Bardeen Bingo. The next one is...
Yeah, they all look pretty similar, which makes sense, given yes. their winning specimens.
Why are you typing things into my notes, Dylan?
I just typed la 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 la.
God. And next is in 1995. Oh, I'm sorry. 19. Did I forget one? I did forget one. Okay, so the one I forgot is called Brayburn's Close Encounter. And that dog won in 1985.
Well, he's adorable.
And you have to Google the photo. I can't actually paste a link. There's no like active link. This is just a screen clipping from a Facebook video of the dog winning the title. So you actually have to look it up on YouTube.
There was no Facebook
it.
In 1985.
No, it's a posted video on Facebook. And on YouTube you can find it too. It's the actual 1985 Westminster Dog Show.
He looks very pleased with himself.
Very much winning. So the next winner was a decade later, whose name was Gale Force Postscript, or their name was Peggy Sue. And I did find that in a magazine article about the dog.
Oh, Gale Force Postscript.
That is a 1985.
Gale Force Postscript.
Sorry,
put that
1995.
Down.
That's a 1995. And then the last one to win was Sadie, also known by her champion name as Roundtown Mercedes of Mary Scott, which is my favorite.
Got to drive around and around town. Mercedes.
Sadie won in 2010. Sadly, wow. Sadie died in 2014 at only 9 years old.
I don't know.
But
well,
yeah.
Sadie's hair looks much more, I don't know,
groomed.
In control, yeah. Past winners.
Sure thing. But yeah, those are the 8 winners of the Best in Show title, who Scottish Terrier Best in Shows. So, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Is there a reason you think that certain breeds win a lot more? Are they more competing? Or
I don't know.
Is the standard easier to
I wonder if it's
abide
just
by?
They're like, I don't know. Maybe it's just a coincidence, or that dog breed has just a much more easy to adjudicate and more typical to win bloodline. I don't
well,
know.
We read all these standards, and some of them are just a lot more specific than others.
That's true.
And I feel like that can, I don't know, that could play a part, given that so many breeds seem to be perennial winners.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't hear about the Wire Fox Terrier much, but I'm surprised to hear they won recently. I thought a lot of their winning was like in the early 20th century or something, when they're more popular.
They've won just over time a lot. They've collected 15 titles over time.
Yeah, I wonder if that has to do with a standard that's more easy to, you know, adhere to perfectly.
I don't know. That's a good question. We should have someone answer that for us.
Talk to an AKC judge at some point.
So currently the Scottish Terrier ranks at number 58 for most registered breeds in the AKC. And a couple fun facts. The Pomeranian has won Best in Show at Westminster one time, and that was in 1988.
It's just so darn cute.
His name was Great Elms Prince Charming II.
Oh, yeah.
And then Beagles have won the title twice, first in 2008 with K-Run's Park Me in First, which I believe was Uno was his name.
K-Run's Park Me in First.
Yeah. And then in 2015 with Tasthan's Looking for Trouble. And I think that was a descendant of Uno.
Well, Beagles are in a run, so.
Yeah. So our two favorite breeds have also won Best in Show.
Maybe the, you know, grandchild of Uno will
Your
win
mom
next.
Has talked about the dog that won.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in our first
Charming.
Episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are we? We have to take another break. No, we don't. Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
I don't know.
So that is the that's the history of the Scottish Terrier up to today. They're still, you know, a pretty decently popular breed in America, I would say. Probably also in Great Britain or the UK. But I definitely, you know, researching the breed, it warmed me up to the breed. So I think they're cute, but I'm not, I don't know. Terriers just aren't my thing. I do love terriers, though. Just from afar.
Yeah, they can be too much, I guess, but
they're little balls of energy. I mean, they have a lot of energy.
Especially young terriers. Can be too much.
Yeah.
But they're very sweet too.
For sure. Well, we are gonna take another break, and then we will be back with the ownership of the Scottish Terrier.
Nice.
We are back with the ownership of the Scottish Terrier. Now the first thing is training, as always. Besides the necessary standard command training for all dogs, Scotties are very good at training for agility and great at learning tricks. Like many terriers, they do well with brief and simple 15-minute training sessions. They also react sharply to their master's vocal tone, so be sure to keep it upbeat. They are natural watchdogs and will keep you alert to new people in the house or strangers in general by sounding off at them. Though they are somewhat antagonizing at first, they quickly warm up to people who show them affection, especially if you give them food.
Yeah, these are some of the things that make, you know, an energetic dog that could be too much for some people, you know, a real boon for others.
Sure.
You know, given that they're really excited to learn tricks.
Yeah.
It'd be difficult for small dogs sometimes, and they're a great watchdog.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, for the same reasons, they could be too much for others.
Mm-hmm. They do come with a lighter stubbornness than other terriers, but keep in mind that if you remain disciplined with their training, it will pay off. To keep a Scottish Terrier fit, they will need about 60 to 90 minutes of walking or playtime per day.
Oh, wow. Okay, so very active.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they are, you know, they are not just like a little terrier. They have some oomph to them, so they definitely do need some exercise.
Yeah, I'd love to see how fast they walk, because they look kind of sluggish with the, you know, when they have long hair and all for the shows.
I think long hair just does that to dogs. I mean, the Afghan hound looks like it's floating.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm sure since they're in a little energetic terrier, they probably move pretty well.
Yeah. So there are some common health concerns with the Scottish Terrier, but they're actually not that crazy. The first are eye problems like cataracts and progressive retinal atrophy, which we talk about all the time on this show. The second are neurological issues like seizures or epilepsy. Brain or bladder cancer are standouts, apparently, with this breed. Bladder stones. The next is Cushing's disease, which I didn't really know what that was, so I looked it up.
We've talked about it a little before.
Yeah, it's also called hyperadrenocorticism. That's a fun word. And it's a tumor on the dog's pituitary gland that causes excessive production of cortisol, which is the primary stress hormone. The symptoms are often mistaken for aging in a dog, and the main ones are extreme thirst and excessive urination. The long-term symptoms include weakening of the dog's musculature, as well as thinning of the coat and skin, which may possibly cause lesions to appear. So it's basically, it's a hormonal syndrome that just weakens the dog over time.
Right.
Hypothyroidism is the next common concern. Then hemophilia or other bleeding disorders, also common in some breeds. And deafness is the last one.
Oh.
As for grooming, regularly scheduled trips to the groomer every 6 to 8 weeks is required to keep the coat trimmed and blended. And like I said earlier in the episode, they have that weird blended fur type, so you have to get them trimmed.
Do most people keep them trimmed shorter than the photos we have here?
Yes, except FDR. There's many do, except they'll have the skirt around the bottom.
Yeah, I wonder if I see more Scottish Terriers around today and I don't even always
maybe
recognize
them.
They
think they're schnauzers.
Yeah, or it's just some generic terrier.
A weekly full brushing and comb out of any matted fur is also required for a Scottish Terrier.
Right, okay.
Finding one, it's not that, you know, most breed clubs nowadays, they have breeder directories and rescue stuff on their website. So this breed club's website has both breeder and rescue resources available. The average cost of a Scottish Terrier puppy in 2022 is $1,700, with the lower costing puppies in the high, you know, like $800 to $900, and the highest quotes being more than $2,500. So I looked at three different websites. This is how I calculate this for y'all, so you know. I go to three different websites that have price quotes. I average them all down, and that's the number I give you. So I try to find different resources, and that includes sometimes breeders, as well as, like, you know, just other things. Like, AKC publishes stuff sometimes, too.
Yeah, that sounds like pretty standard pricing.
Yeah.
I usually just give a giant range. Somewhere between $800
and
$3,000. You know.
So, their life expectancy is 12 years. And as for intelligence, Mr. Stanley Coren ranks the Scottish Terrier at number 65 for intelligence based on repetitive obedience training. And that is alongside St. Bernards. Fun.
Interesting little pair.
Yeah. While obedience may not be the strongest suit for this breed, they are extraordinarily loyal and are naturals when it comes to watching for strangers. In addition, they do well with tricks so long as you don't exhaust them of it and reward them for it with love and affection.
So much sitting, I'm exhausted.
One of the books even said, and I thought you would get a kick out of this because I know you really want to train a dog to do this. One of them was trained to go get the paper.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Or slippers. Like, I know you want a dog that can bring you slippers.
Just always give the dog a job.
The last thing we're going to talk about on this episode are notable Scottish Terriers. There really is one notable Scottish Terrier besides Toto.
Scotty from Star Trek.
No, it is Fala, who is FDR's Scottish Terrier.
Of course, yeah.
Now, Dylan did a special episode about presidential pets, and he covered FDR's beloved Scottish Terrier, Fala.
My
in
little
that
dog,
episode.
Fala.
I'd like to take this opportunity to revisit Fala and his fame for you all. So he was given to FDR in 1940 by his cousin Margaret Daisy Suckley and named him after his Scottish ancestor, the outlaw John Murray of Fallahill.
Right.
Fala was supposedly featured in an MGM feature film that showed life in the White House, but I could not find any information about the film. I am wondering if it was used as B-roll for news segments or a short that served as a movie preview, because that was the thing they did then.
Hmm. Sounds like a pretty bad movie if it was feature length.
The story goes... Oh, wait. Blah, blah. Fala was also subject to criticism from the Republican Party in the 1940s. As the story goes, according to FDR's library archives, President President Roosevelt was traveling in secret to Hawaii in the summer of 1944 to discuss the plans of retaking the Philippines from Japan with General Douglas MacArthur, and then a joint attack from the east on Japan with Admiral Chester Nimitz.
But also go surfing with his dog, right? That's what he was really doing.
FDR traveled aboard the USS Baltimore with Falla. While FDR reportedly rested for most of the trip, Falla...
Surfing with his dog.
No. Falla traversed the ship and went in down into like the Navy quarters of the ship, like where all the seamen were. And he found good company with them as they all gave him attention and food.
Of course.
Except some of them clipped off his curls, which FDR was not amused by.
Oh, yeah, so you gotta be careful with your grooming.
While FDR returned with Falla to the States after the meetings concluded, a rumor was spread by a Republican representative, Harold Knutson, from Minnesota, that Falla was left behind somewhere in the Aleutian Islands during this secretive trip to the Pacific, and that a destroyer was sent from Seattle at the expense of millions of dollars of taxpayer money. The rumor was proven false, and FDR gave one of the most well-remembered political speeches of all time in American history live via radio to an audience of millions of voters about the debacle. FDR was in the middle of his, he opened his nomination with the Falla speech, actually, in the 1944 election. FDR was hoping to win an historic fourth term as president, and the Falla speech is credited with helping to sway the American public to nominate him for president again in 1944. Now, I'm going to play the Falla speech for us today because I got a huge kick out of it.
It's fun.
It is fun, but you have to watch it because his reactions to things, it just makes people laugh. So I'm going to turn my laptop.
Mugging the camera.
Turn the laptop. Start. Roosevelt opens 1944 campaign.
Huzzah!
Okay.
Bad day, 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 day. Breaking news.
Oh shit! Okay.
The president.
Before the International Teamsters Union, President Roosevelt opens his fight for re-election.
In late September, FDR spoke at a Teamsters dinner in Washington, where everyone had had a lot to drink.
Oh,
the speech was broadcast all over the country.
That's pretty bold. And the president one sober guy in the back
made the most of it.
Hey.
A Republican congressman had charged falsely on the floor of the House
like
that
Tom
the
Hanks.
President had wasted taxpayer dollars and risked sailors' lives by sending a destroyer to pick up his dog.
These Republican leaders have not been content with attacks on me, or on my wife, or on my sons. No, not content with that. They now include my little dog, Falla.
That explains how big the reactions were if everyone was drinking.
Yeah, everyone, watch, he takes a drink and they laugh harder.
They weren't really attacking the dog either. I think the attacks were at you, FDR. Okay.
Well, of course, I don't resent attacks. And my family don't resent attacks. But Falla does resent attacks.
Well, being a Scotty, that's more understandable now, even. I bet Falla really did resent even a knock at the door.
As soon as he learned that the Republican fiction writers, in Congress and out, had concocted a story that I'd left him behind on an Aleutian island.
Nuts him.
And had sent a destroyer back to find him. At a cost to the taxpayers of $2, $3, $8, or $20 million. His Scotch soul was furious.
So I always thought that was a joke about, like, the Scottish, but now I'm wondering if it's actually a joke about the breed itself, too.
He has not been the same dog since.
It is a brilliant speech. Like, especially to be given just on the radio. Like, you're opening your campaign. You're like, okay, so these, you know, these Republicans are lying about my dog. Like, they're lying about my dog.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the Fallis speech. It's a very historic speech. And he won again in 1944, but he sadly died of a stroke in 1945.
Yeah.
And then Fallis went to live with Eleanor Roosevelt, obviously. And then Fallis died in 1952, and he is buried next to FDR and Eleanor. Eleanor was buried there, too. Yeah. So he's right next to FDR. And FDR's other dog before Fallis. There's two dogs buried with FDR.
The one without a controversy around it.
Yeah, well, he wasn't president when he had that dog.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, that is all I have on the Scottish Terrier.
Well, I like them.
Yeah, I do, too.
They're cute. I want one.
Yeah. Do you want a barky little terrier?
Yeah, kind of. We should have a bigger house.
Always, if we had a house.
And, you know, plenty of time to keep it occupied, so it's not just barking when it's bored.
Sure.
But yeah, I guess it'd be a particular dog for a particular lifestyle.
Maybe when we're older.
It sounds like a good dog for families. Like,
that's,
you know,
true.
If you have kids that want to dote over a little dog.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it ranked them as kind of in the middle when it came to socializing. Mm. Like, they tend
kids, too.
They tend to be really good with just, like, their owner.
Right.
Is kind of the drift I caught. They're very...
More like one-person dogs.
Yeah. So maybe if you're, you know, just you live alone and you want a little dog, a Scottish Terrier is a great option.
Yeah. If you're willing to, yeah, give them plenty of exercise.
Yeah. Well, sure. That's true of any dog. But, I mean, I not to say that they don't do well with kids. They are very sociable. But when it comes to, like, having a master, they're very dedicated to their one person. So.
Right.
But anyways, yeah, that is the Scottish Terrier. And I hope you all enjoyed this first episode of season 6.
I know I did.
Yes, I enjoyed writing it, too. It was a really nice episode. Fun to write, fun to research.
All right. It's time for boop-a-da-boop-a-da-boop dog news.
It was a very low boop-a-da-boop-a-boop.
Boop-a-da-boop-a-da-boop dog news.
There's a scene in The Office when Michael Scott goes, attention, he does it for like a really long time. That's what I think of when we do dog news.
Well, dog news is coming to us from Gizmodo.
Oh, I thought that was a city for a second. It's like, where?
Gizmodo, Illinois. No, gizmodo.com.
Okay.
Robot dogs could soon patrol a U.S. Space Force station.
Interesting. Okay. If you hear children laughing, there are children playing outside. Dylan doesn't
don't think they'll be picked up.
Oh, you'd be surprised. They are, usually.
It's right at our door.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the four-legged robots recently performed a security patrol in Cape Canaveral, Florida.
Quadrobots? TM, I'm trademarking.
Quadrobots?
Like, instead of quadrupeds, quadrobots. Okay. I'm trademarking that right now.
Are you?
It's a verbal agreement with the trademark people.
TM, TM, TM.
TM, TM, TM.
Yes, there's a demonstration on July 27th with the Space Force later releasing some images. It's personnel operating two robots on the site. And they're officially referred to as Ghost Robotics Quadruped Unmanned Ground Vehicles.
Or
Robodogs.
Quadrupods.
Or QUGV.
God.
And the robots are intended for manual and repetitive tasks, as well as damage assessments and patrol to save significant man hours, according to the Space Force.
I think the real question is, where do they go poop? Where do these robot dogs go poop?
You see, this is the most brilliant thing about them. They don't.
They have to
poop. The most revolutionary part of the robot dog.
What?
So, yeah, they may not be fluffy or require belly rubs.
Is that in the article?
It's in the Gizmodo article. But they're meant to replicate the qualities of military canines in a much more terrifying form. Remember that movie Rottweiler I talked about in the Rottweiler episode?
Yeah.
About an evil robot dog from the military?
Yeah.
So I guess this is them.
I don't know. I mean, I understand the usage of it. It's in space where other dogs would just float and bark and poop everywhere.
Yeah, so they were built by a Philadelphia-based company, Ghost Robotics.
Or Quadrobots.
Well, I first saw the Boston Dynamics. like a robot dog. Do you remember those? Yeah, videos? A few years back.
Were those like the dogs that you could buy at the toy store that would
No, they were much more sinister looking.
Okay, then no.
These robot dogs will be used as force multiplier for enhanced situational awareness by patrolling areas that aren't desirable for human beings and vehicles.
Like space.
Said Jordan Chris, the 325th Security Forces Squadron Commander.
Of the Space Force?
Yes, of the U.S. Space Force. The Air Force oversees the Space Force.
Ah.
And they've been using robo-dogs for nearly 2 years.
I would think the Container Store oversees the usage of space.
Yeah, the Container Store oversees the Space Force. But the Air Force oversees the Container Store, so.
Yeah, it's all connected.
It's all one big meld.
Well.
So that's it for dog news. Robo dogs protecting the Space Force. Robo dogs in space.
We tried robo cats, but they didn't like us.
they were just passive.
Yeah.
Just licking themselves all day.
Well, that is it for this episode, everyone. We thank you so much for listening to...
Thanks for tuning into our new season.
We're getting a dog. And, yeah, Dylan, I really don't have anything else to add. Do you have anything to add at the end of this one?
No. Just remember to help control the pet population, have your pets spayed or neutered, and help your local shelters any way you can, whether that's donating, volunteering, fostering, or adopting.
We'll see you next week. Wesley Van Hoosen and Dylan Naylor are not pet professionals. Any advice regarding pet ownership and the responsibilities thereof taken from this program should be checked with your veterinarian. All episodes are researched thoroughly, fact-checked, and additionally researched during post-production. Annotated bibliographies of every episode can be found at weregettingadog.com/bibliographies. This podcast is hosted by Dylan Naylor and Wesley Van Hoosen. If you'd like to reach out or submit a photo of your dog to be featured on our social media, please contact us at WGAD@ArcadiaPodcastNetwork.com or on our Instagram at We're Getting a Dog. Thank you for listening to We're Getting a Dog from the Arcadia Podcast Network.